Chapter 6. Located in the heart of the Senate District, between the Jedi Temple and the Galactic Justice Center, Fellowship Plaza was usually abandoned after dark. But tonight, Alima was hardly alone. Jason and Ben stood just a few meters away, talking in the shadows beside a neatly trimmed row of blart trees. And she was not the only one eavesdropping on them. First, she had spotted Lumia, standing in a tall privacy hedge on the opposite side of the walkway. So quiet and motionless, it was impossible to be certain she was still there. Then there was the dark blur that had come creeping through the fog after Ben arrived. It was about 20 meters away, crouching behind a hedge on Alima's side of the walkway, pointing what appeared to be a small parabolic dish through the blart trees toward where Ben and Jason stood talking. Whoever it was, the shadow had to be a Jedi, and a fairly adept one at that. Like Lumia and Alima herself, he, or she, had drawn in on himself until he no longer seemed to have a Force presence at all.
"Have the sparring sessions been going?" Jason asked. "Is he still trying to make you lose your temper?"
Alima thought she saw Ben shaking his head. The two cousins were taking care to stand out of the light, and in such foggy conditions, even dark-sensitive Twi'lek eyes could see little more than silhouettes. "No," Ben said. "I think he's really trying to teach me something."
"You couldn't ask for a better instructor," Jason said. "But be careful. Your father is just looking for an excuse to send you back to the academy."
Ben remained silent for a moment, then asked, "Is he going to find one?"
"That's up to you," Jason replied evenly. "Do you think the techniques I've been teaching you are dark?"
"It depends on how I use them," Ben replied.
"Exactly."
Jason's voice grew warm, and he clasped Ben's shoulder.
"But the older your father grows, the more conservative he becomes. He's afraid he hasn't done a good job preparing the modern generation of Jedi, that they aren't strong enough to employ all aspects of the Force."
"What do you think?" Ben asked.
"I think he's done a better job than he realizes. Many Jedi Knights aren't strong enough to use the whole Force, but some are."
Jason laid both hands on Ben's shoulders.
"You are."
Ben poured pride into the Force. "You're sure?"
"What do you think?" Jason demanded. "You're just asking because you want me to say it again."
"I guess so." Ben's tone was chagrined. "You wouldn't be teaching me to use my emotions if you didn't think I was strong enough." Alima's heart swelled with an awe that was almost religious. Unless she misunderstood what she was hearing, and that did not seem possible, Luke Skywalker was losing his only son to the thing he feared most, the dark side. And his own nephew was going to be the instrument of that loss.
"That's right," Jason said to Ben. "I'd never teach you something you're not ready to use. Now I need you to tell Captain Shevu that I won't be able to join him on tonight's raids. You'll have to handle the Jedi duties alone."
"Can do," Ben said. "But Captain Geardon is starting to worry about not having enough Jedi to run two teams. Maybe you should consider asking the Council for some help." Jason tipped his head at a cynical angle.
"And how do you think that request would be received?"
"Yeah, I know. Dad runs the Council." Ben's tone was more conspiratorial than apologetic. "But Captain Geardon wanted me to suggest it."
"I see."
Jason considered this for a moment, then said,
"You'd better tell Geardon that I'm considering the idea. We don't want our subordinates worrying about our relationship with the Jedi Council, do we?"
"Probably not," Ben agreed. "Should we hold the interrogations for you?" Jason shook his head.
"Geardon may have to start without me," he said. "I'm meeting someone else. Then I have some business with Admiral Neofel.
The GAG Star Destroyer?
Maybe.
Jason pointed up the walkway toward the Galactic Justice Center.
Go on to headquarters. I'll tell you about it at home.
You better. Ben turned and started up the walkway, passing first Lumia's hiding place, then Alima's. Once he was past, Alima turned her attention to the backside of the hedge and found the eavesdropper creeping toward her, still holding the parabolic antenna in one hand. As the shadow drew nearer, its silhouette sharpened into that of a Jedi in a standard hooded robe, then into the form of a tall woman with the pale face and heavy brow of a chief. A couple of steps more, and Alima realized that this was not just any Jedi following Ben. It was Trissina Lobi, one of the masters who had served on Cal Omis's special counsel during the war with the Yuuzhan Vong. Alima dropped her hand to her lightsaber, at the same time willing Lobi not to make the mistake of letting that parabolic antenna swing past her hiding place. At this range, the antenna was sensitive enough to pick up sounds as faint as heartbeats, and the last thing Alima wanted was to have her presence detected. She needn't have worried. Lobi was still 2 meters away when Lumia's sharp voice sounded from the other side of the hedge.
Jason, I'm impressed.
Alima risked looking away from Lobi and saw Lumia stepping onto the foggy walkway, her long robes seeming to flow out of the hedge as though they were nothing but shadow.
You have him very well under control.
It's not a matter of control.
There was just a hint of hostility in Jason's voice.
Ben is my cousin. I care about him very much.
Lumia studied Jason from behind her veil, then said,
Caring is fine, as long as you don't let it stand in your way.
There's a difference between letting something stand in your way and destroying it needlessly, Jason countered. I'm beginning to think maybe I should send him back to his father.
Lumia's voice grew as alarmed as it did disapproving.
Why would you do a foolish thing like that?
To complete his training, Jason said. I'm having trouble finding the time to do it myself, and that leaves him vulnerable. You saw how he tried to manipulate me into feeding his ego.
I did. And that kind of weakness will make him a servant to his emotions, Lumia said. It will also make him your servant, if you use it wisely.
That's not what I want for my cousin, Jason said, sounding slightly disgusted.
What you want doesn't matter, Lumia retorted. What you need does. And you need an apprentice.
I need an assistant, Jason countered. And there are several Jedi Knights who would serve me better and require less time from me. Tahiri Vela, for example.
Tahiri is not a descendant of Anakin Skywalker, Lumia replied. She does not have Ben's potential, and she will not serve you as well in the long run.
Jason remained silent for a long time, then finally asked,
Don't you mean serve you?
It's the same thing, Lumia replied quickly. We serve one cause, though I am having doubts about you, Jason. You seem more committed to your friends and family than you do to our mission.
If that means protecting them from needless harm, then yes, I am, Jason said. We're supposed to be doing this for the good of the galaxy, and the galaxy includes my friends and family.
Of course it does, Jason. I don't mean to imply that it doesn't.
Though Lumia's words were conciliatory, her voice remained stern and demanding.
But the galaxy is bigger than your family. You must be willing to sacrifice what you care about to a greater purpose.
I've already proved that I'm willing to do that, Jason said coldly. I'm proving it every day.
Indeed you are.
Lumia's voice softened, and she took Jason's elbow in her hand.
All I'm saying is that we need to keep Ben near. I don't know how yet, but I have a sense that he will prove the key to our success.
Jason considered this for a moment, then let out his breath and nodded.
Okay, for now. But the minute I begin to suspect that you're only using him to get even with Uncle Luke...
You won't, because I'm not,
Lumia said.
Everything I do to bring peace and justice to the galaxy.
Alima's admiration for the woman was growing by the moment. Jason Solo wasn't easy to deceive, and she was using Jason's own idealism to destroy him and his family. Delightful. Lumia glanced up and down the walkway, no doubt reaching out in the force to make certain no one had wandered into the area while they were talking, then asked,
Why did you want to see me here?
Because I didn't have time to go to your apartment, Jason said.
Alima glanced back to the other side of the hedge. Lobi had dropped into a crouch and was running a feed line from the antenna to a recording rod on her belt. Now Alima began to feel less awestruck by the balance than betrayed by it. Since her failed attack on Jason, she had spent her time spying on him and Lumia, and it had slowly dawned on her that just as Luke was losing Ben to what he feared most, Jason was becoming what Leia hated most, a Sith Lord. But if Lobi revealed that to Luke now, Jason's training would never be completed. Luke would hunt Lumia down and kill her. Leia would redeem her son through her love, and the Solos would live happily ever after. And where was the balance in that? Jason recaptured Alima's attention with an angry rebuttal to something she had missed.
I don't have time to be that careful tonight. Neothel is about to give me my own Star Destroyer.
His voice grew calmer, yet also more cold and demanding.
I was supposed to meet her 5 minutes ago, but I need you to take care of something for me. Now.
What is it?
Lumia asked. Her tone made clear that she wasn't agreeing to anything.
And you might try asking in a civil manner.
Alima kept her gaze fixed on Lobi, who was continuing to record every word. After a moment, Jason spoke in a calmer tone.
Sorry. I lost a friend today.
I see.
Lumia's voice held just a hint of disapproval at Jason's sadness.
That must be why the Ferals are rioting.
Yes. The world brain died this afternoon.
Jason's voice actually cracked.
But the Ferals aren't exactly rioting. They just don't have any impulse control without the world brain to guide them.
And you want me to provide some?
No. Coruscant Security can handle that, he said. I need you to finish that list I gave you.
The Bothans?
Lumia asked.
Jason, you can't let your personal feelings...
I'm not, Jason interrupted. The Corellians finally figured out how GAG has been tracking them. They're planning to send their whole network after the world brain.
But not if they realize it's dead already,
Lumia surmised.
Right, Jason said. And I need them to attack. It will bring the terrorists out in the open.
And GAG will be waiting?
Lumia asked.
GAG will be watching, Jason corrected. Coruscant Security will handle the actual ambush. Our agents will concentrate on the terrorists who escape. Some are bound to panic, and with any luck we'll be able to follow them back to their ringleaders.
So, many Bothans must die to bait your trap.
Lumia said.
No one would understand the necessity better than Bothans, Jason said.
As Jason said this, Lobi was pulling her comlink from her utility belt. Alima watched with increasing despair as the chief carefully set the parabolic antenna on the ground and donned her headset and throat mic. This could not be in the interests of the balance, not when Alima still owed Leia so much. After a moment's pause, Lumia said,
"You know that finishing this list will force Bathawi to declare war. Their ambassador is on it."
"Do him first," Jason said. "Bathawi is going to declare war anyway. Neothel says they're already outfitting 3 cruiser fleets for Corellian crews."
"Fine," Lumia said. "The ambassador first, if you're sure."
"Don't I sound sure?" Jason snapped.
A pair of military boots began to clack down the walkway as he departed.
"Just do it. I can't keep the Admiral waiting any longer."
Trissina Lobi reached for her throat mic and started to depress the send key in rhythmic sequence, using a click code to begin a silent broadcast to whoever was on the other end. Alima could see her finger movements just well enough to make out some of the message. "Skywalker, he was... Lumia is following Ben..." That was as far as Lobi made it, before Alima understood the reason the Force had brought the chief so close to her hiding place. "Is more..." Alima jerked her lightsaber off her belt. She was a Jedi, and Jedi served the balance. "Lumia is..." Alima sprang from her hiding place, activating her blade as she flew through the air. Lobi was already rolling, her hand flying from her throat as she reached for her own weapon. Alima stretched her jump into a Force leap and brought her mangled half-foot down between Lobi's shoulder blades, then felt a crushing pain as the chief continued to roll, smashing the back of an elbow into Alima's knee and knocking her legs out from beneath her. Alima landed flat atop a chrysanthus shrub, surprised and hurting. Lobi had never been a flashy fighter, but she was powerful and effective, and clearly deserving of her rank. Alima whipped her lightsaber around to protect herself, half expecting to feel the death slash before it reached middle guard. But the chief had been disoriented by the unexpected assault, and decided to buy some reaction time by leaping into a high Force flip. Alima arched her back and sprang to her feet, then nearly fell when her aching knee buckled. Instead of leaping into another attack, she extended her hand and used the Force to pluck the headset off Lobi's head. The chief landed an instant later, her eyes wide with rage and disbelief, but she wasted no time acknowledging Alima's identity. She merely ignited her own lightsaber and raced forward to attack. Alima barely had time to slash the headset apart before the chief was on her, driving her back toward the hedge with a combination of high slashes and powerful front thrust kicks. The first kick that landed drove the air from Alima's lungs. The second doubled her over, making her an easy target, until she used the Force to accelerate herself off Lobi's foot and deep into the hedge, where she had been hiding a moment earlier. As Alima crashed into the blartrees, she heard Lumia on the other side calling down the walkway to Jason.
"Go on, I'll handle this."
"No," Alima wanted to yell. "Lobi is too dangerous. We need all the help we can get."
But of course she did not dare. During the early stages of the Killix conflict with the Galactic Alliance, her nest, the Dark Nest, had attempted to assassinate Jason's daughter, and she was quite sure that he'd be happy to let Lobi kill her. So she pushed out onto the walkway just far enough to reveal herself to Lumia. The Sith scowled and ignited her own weapon, an exotic one that seemed equal parts whip and lightsaber, with long, flexible strands of metal and bright, hissing energy.
"Who are you?"
Lumia demanded.
"Why are you—"
"No time!"
Alima launched herself back through the blartrees. If Lobi had not yet followed, that could only mean she was fleeing.
"Come, before the Jedi spy escapes."
Alima emerged from the hedge to find Lobi 20 paces away and already fading into the night. Alima dropped her lightsaber and pointed in the chief's direction, opening herself completely to the Force, using her anger and fear to draw it deep down inside. A moment later, its power began to burn, and she released it in a long, crackling bolt that caught her target square between the shoulder blades and drove her to the ground. Lumia emerged from the hedge, her light whip burning a bright-colored hole in the fog. She glanced at the blue bolts coming from Alima's fingertips, then asked again,
"Who are you?"
"We're a friend."
Continuing to pour force lightning into Lobi's prostrate form, Alima limped forward on her throbbing knee.
"One who doesn't wish Master Skywalker to learn what you are doing with his nephew."
Lumia followed.
"We? I don't see..."
"Later,"
Alima snapped. They had closed to within 5 meters of Lobi.
"Right now, we are in too much trouble to..."
Lobi suddenly stopped writhing and extended a hand toward a nearby patio. A decorative urn came flying out of the fog. Alima let the force lightning sizzle out and tried to redirect the urn, but Lobi's force grasp was too secure. The urn caught her full in her crippled shoulder and sent her flying. She landed in the chrysanthus shrub several meters away, her body throbbing with pain and her mind numb with shock. The hum and sizzle of clashing weapons slowly brought her back to her senses, and she sat up to find Trissina Lobi spinning and parrying, slowly forcing Lumia back, probing and feinting, trying to work her way past the crackling strands of Lumia's exotic light whip and into the striking range of a lightsaber. Alima summoned her own weapon back into her grasp, then stood and limped forward to help. Lobi sprang into a backflip and sailed over a crackling whip strike. Then, as she was still descending, she extended a hand in Alima's direction and used the force to pull her into the path of the flashing strands. Lumia barely managed to shut down the weapon before it struck, and even then the hot filaments cut through Alima's robe, burning a rainbow of hot welts into her thigh and ribs. Alima was still screaming when Lobi landed at Lumia's side. The chief brought her lightsaber down, and Lumia's weapon arm, one of her many cybernetic parts, fell to the ground, trailing sparks and hydraulic fluid. Lobi reversed her blade instantly, angling for Lumia's torso, but Alima was already leaping forward to catch the chief's attack on her own lightsaber. Lobi whipped her lightsaber around low, aiming at Alima's knees and forcing her to leap back. Alima pointed at Lumia's severed arm, then used the force to send it spinning toward Lobi's head. The chief woman ducked easily, but that gave Lumia time to call her light whip into her remaining hand and strike again. Lobi pivoted away from the attack. Alima sprang at her from behind, striking for the chief's thick neck, then cried out in surprise as a huge foot glanced off her ribs, and still sent her staggering back. Lumia seized the opportunity to launch a flurry of attacks, fanning the strands of her whip to make it more difficult to block, striking right and left to prevent the chief from pivoting away again, slowly driving Lobi back toward Alima's droning lightsaber. Then, finally, Lobi faltered, gathering herself for a force leap, but hesitating and retreating another step toward Alima instead. It was the moment Alima had been waiting for.
"You are good, Master Lobi, but not that good."
Alima spoke in a force whisper so soft that it was little more than a thought.
"Even you cannot defeat two of us."
Lobi's head snapped around, her eyes filled with confusion and doubt, and she spun into a whirling charge of crescent kicks and horizontal lightsaber strikes. Alima held her ground, ducking a lightsaber strike and letting a kick slip off her shoulder, then force-slammed the hilt of her lightsaber into the pit of the chief's stomach and spoke again in her force whisper.
"No good."
Amazingly, Lobi stumbled only one step back, but that step was one too far. Lumia's light whip caught her across the back of the legs and severed them both at the knees. The chief roared first in anger, then, as she dropped onto the stumps and pitched forward onto her hands, in agony. It was a terrible sound to hear. Alima stepped forward and spoke once more in her force whisper.
"There is no need to suffer."
She swept her blade across the back of the chief's neck, and the head tumbled away.
"Your fight is done."
Lumia stepped into view at the other end of the body, but her gaze remained on Alima, and she did not deactivate her light whip.
"Do I know you?"
she asked.
"Not yet."
Alima knelt beside Lobi's headless body and rolled it over, then removed the recording rod from the chief's belt and tossed it to Lumia.
"But we hope you will let us serve you. What you are doing with Jason is so delicious, and so right for the balance."